This is Kate Swoboda, creator of YourCourageousLife.com, director of the Courageous Living Coach Certification at TeamCLCC.com, and author of the book The Courage Habit, which is available at booksellers and at Amazon. The Your Courageous Life podcast is all about going after what you want and creating and living a more courageous, emotionally resilient life. Might drop a couple of F-bombs, so maybe don't listen with your kids in the backseat of the car. And here we go with today's episode. Hey, everyone. Today's episode is titled Committed to Being Offended. And that might be kind of an odd thing to explore, and I'll break down the story behind that. But it's basically an episode that might be helpful in shedding some light on relationships that have been just chronically problematic. Maybe with family, maybe with friends. Feels like you think things are kind of getting better, going okay, and then you find out later, oh, they're like you said or did this thing, and they're upset, and you're just going, okay, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells. I feel like I can't do anything right. And that's what this is all about. I basically had an experience where I was talking to someone and I was trying to get help with a situation. I had this chronically inflamed relationship where over and over, no matter what I did, later I'd find out that I did it wrong in that person's estimation somehow. So like if I asked what time it was, I was perceived as asking about the time because I was trying to hurry everyone along and I was impatient. If I stopped by the grocery store to grab a snack a few hours before dinner, I was perceived as slighting someone's cooking. Like I was having a snack a few hours before dinner because I didn't want to eat their food, even though I ate their food. It was like kind of weird. And then there was that time they arrived early to meet up and I didn't know that they had arrived early. And then I arrived at the agreed upon time and thus they, because they arrived early, had to wait for me. And then I was told that I was rude for making them wait. And I remember saying to this friend, I truly don't know what to do. Like, I want to bring love to this situation. And I keep thinking about how I can do it differently. Like, when they got so upset about that grocery store snack situation, I made sure that the next time they made a meal, I just fawned all over them. I oohed and I aahed. It's such a great meal. It's so awesome. And later, they said they were upset with me because I hadn't eaten enough. And my friend goes, and of course she's super chill about it because she's wise and she just knew. She just goes, Kate, there's nothing you can do here. Some people are committed to being offended. And I was like, huh? Maybe you're having that reaction too. Committed to being offended? Like, who would do that? Why? Like, what? That's how I felt. But once I started looking at it deeper, I could see it. I could see the way in which the people I was interacting with, because there was actually more than one person in my life showing up that way. They were habitually seeing everything through a lens of how I must have done something wrong. And particularly, it seemed often as if they felt that I had the intention to slight them. There was like this commitment to being offended above all else that cast everything I said or did in a poor light. So in case you've ever felt a similar kind of thing, you're like, oh, this is an aha moment for me. What are the signs of people committed to being offended? And as I began thinking about this and jotting down notes to talk about this for this podcast episode, I was trying to identify behaviors and then offer some examples. So these are just general examples. I'm not using a podcast episode to talk about one person. I'm just thinking of things that could fall into these categories. So first thing, people who are committed to being offended, they take things personally. So in the example I gave earlier, like you didn't eat enough of the meal they made. To them, it's not about your appetite, it's personal. people who are committed to being offended will assume that how they feel automatically equals the truth, like capital T truth. So in other words, if they feel irritated by you, they won't question whether their irritation is actually warranted by anything you did. The assumption will just be, if I feel irritated, it must mean that you are the one doing the irritating. People who are committed to being offended don't ask questions, because asking questions might clear things up and help everyone avoid the drama. I mean, frankly, asking questions might provide them with evidence that contradicts their justifications for being so offended. There might be an explanation for something, and then they wouldn't be right about being so offended anymore. People who are committed to being offended make assumptions about who you are that are unchanged even when receiving conflicting information. So the times you did something nice, the nice times, they never count as much as the times when you made a mistake. Or they say, you said this to me, you said this to me, you said this to me. When you show the email in which you definitively, it's right there in the email, said something different than what they insist you said, they'll pivot the argument to something more vague that keeps the conflict going, again, continuing to find evidence somehow for the assumption they've made about who you are that is unchanged, even if the email is right there in their face and you can point to the thing you actually said that was not what they said you said. People who are committed to being offended let drama quickly spiral. Like if they ask a question and you say, I need to get back to you, if you haven't done that within 24 hours, they just spiral into like, you don't even care about me. People who are committed to being offended don't pause to consider that they could be wrong or that there could be other alternative explanations for behavior. Like if you didn't send them a birthday card, it's got to be that you don't care. It can't possibly be that you're really overwhelmed with work. You're really struggling with something privately. By the way, since coronavirus, I have to say I've seen a lot of that. I've seen people posting on Facebook. I've heard conversations where it's like if somebody doesn't say, hey, how are you doing? It's like, well, I guess I'm seeing who really cares about me. It's like, hold on a minute. It's a pandemic. Like, this person might be really struggling with something that has nothing to do with you. That might be why they haven't been in touch. Personally, I didn't have a friend get offended by my lack of contact, but I actually felt it important myself to clean up a lack of contact where I texted her and I just said, hey, I really got to apologize for the fact that I have not been in touch. I have really been kind of in it between I moved during 2020 to a new state, pandemic, lots of different things going on. I just was in it for a while. So it had nothing to do with her. And thankfully, like I said, she didn't go into that space. But in general, someone who's committed to being offended is not even going to consider that there could be an alternative explanation. Someone who's committed to being offended will probably, and unconsciously, by the way, I don't think they're usually doing this on purpose, but unconsciously set up situations in such a way that it's really likely there's going to be a fail of some kind. Like they'll say they can get together, but only within a certain narrow window. And if you can't make that happen, you're now the one who's rigid. You're uncompromising. You won't do it the way I need you to do it. That's setting everything up to fail. People who are committed to being offended do not take responsibility for their feelings. What they feel is likely to be vented onto you instead of handled by them as an independent, autonomous adult. They will probably assume the worst instead of giving any benefit of the doubt. So this example I gave earlier of, I asked, oh, what time is it? And to me, that was a completely innocuous question, but it was assumed just by default that I must have been trying to ask that question to hurry everybody along. So somebody committed to being offended is going to assume the worst about your intentions behind the question. They'll assume that you must have carried the worst tone of voice. It can't just be that you were tired. It can't just be that maybe you were in a hurry in that moment. It can't just be that maybe they were wronging. There was nothing about your tone of voice. It has to be an assumption of the worst. People who are committed to being offended, again, they're not doing this on purpose, I don't think. They often have limited skills for conflict management. Though I will say, more and more often I'm noticing that they'll talk the talk, like intentionally shunning someone will be called, well, I've got boundaries. Getting in a pot shot will be called, well, I'm standing up for myself. If you try to explain yourself in the hopes of resolving conflict, you'll be told you're attempting to gaslight them. If they feel irritated with you and take it out on you and you say, hold on a minute, they're going to go, well, I'm authentically feeling my feelings. So there's a limited skill for conflict management. And I bring up the talking the talk examples because that was a place where I really would get stuck sometimes. I'd notice that there was a limited skill in conflict management, and then I'm going, well, what's going on? I mean, they're telling me they just have boundaries, or they're telling me that I'm gaslighting them. I don't want to gaslight somebody. Am I gaslighting somebody if I just say, hold on a minute, that's not the way it happened, and we both are allowed to have different interpretations of the way that panned out? And last, you might notice that someone who is committed to being offended in their relationship with you is probably going to generally have a kind of pessimistic attitude or a habit of assuming the worst about everything. Like if there's one bright news headline, well, people are still starving and we haven't solved racism and people still die from everyday diseases due to bad drinking water. Like, okay, I got it. All those things are true. And there's one bright news headline. Can we just be glad about that for a moment? Like if you're taking a walk in a gorgeous forest, they're not noticing the flowers and the fauna. They're sore, they're tired, they're achy, they're eager for the walk to conclude. If you love a particular spot for breakfast, they are annoyed when you take them there because the place has regular syrup instead of maple syrup, and they'll tell you how it took too long to be seated. So what else is happening? The behaviors I've outlined above are behaviors that, frankly, all of us at some point or another have acted out in relationships. Yes, including me. No one's perfect. I have absolutely been someone in relationships where I have been committed to being offended. Like all those behaviors, that entire list, I've done them all. And then I've had other times where just some of those behaviors have shown up. No one's perfect. And let's be real, it's hard to admit when we're wrong. It's hard to look at our feelings of anger and take responsibility for those feelings instead of making someone else the culprit. It's hard to avoid getting defensive when someone is upset with us. It's hard to take in feedback about our behavior, especially if we really were trying to do it differently. So it's when these behaviors are chronic over time that you see, okay, someone here is committed to being offended, and I need to recognize that. What I've come to recognize is that when someone is committed to being offended, they are in pain. How did they get this way? Well, more than likely, someone who has been harmed or betrayed by multiple other people got that way because they were harmed and betrayed. Like quite literally, they're walking through life as if wearing like sunglasses that just mute everything down to gray. If you're in this kind of relationship with someone and you're wondering why it is that everything you do seems to be perceived as a slight, it's likely because this person, not by you, but somewhere in their past, has been hurt enough times that they're now hypervigilant. They're on the lookout for signs of offense so that they won't be hurt again. The last person who didn't send them a birthday card was the person who hurt them, which is why now when they don't get a birthday card, they got their panties in a twist about it. Also, let's recognize too that their skills are limited around conflict management. And in a culture saturated with memes that equate walking away from conflicted relationships with a big F you and a middle finger without explanation as, oh, that's healthy boundaries, I've said this in other podcast episodes. No, it ain't. That's avoidance. They aren't learning conflict resolution anywhere. So you've got two things going on when someone's committed to being offended. One, there's very real suffering and hurt. And two, there's a lack of skill as to how to manage that. And if you are the person in relationship with someone who is committed to being offended, you can recognize their pain, but you don't have to put up with it. So here's what to do. First, I think this is a big one. This might be the hardest one of all of them. Recognize your own potential for being committed to being offended. Recognize your own potential for being committed to being offended. The entire time I was writing down notes and behaviors to create this podcast episode, I was thinking to myself, yep, I've done that. Yep, I've done that. I mean, you might have heard this list of behaviors and nodded your head as you thought of a specific person who's been doing these things in your life. But have you considered that in your own conflicted feelings, you might be assuming the worst about that person? That you might be assuming your feelings are automatically facts? That you aren't pausing to consider where you might be wrong? This isn't about beating up on them, and it's not about beating up on you. I'm not asking you to recognize your own potential for being committed to being offended so that then you beat up on yourself so that you can change. No, I'm saying let's recognize we all do it. It humanizes us. It helps us to take it less personally. From there, recognize the person's pain. It's a lot easier to get along with people when we see them as human, consisting of multiple facets of their existence, having an entire history that has nothing to do with you. With some of the people I've had the most trouble with, I actually have taken a moment with a piece of paper to actually write out all the possible things this person might have endured that has them act the way that they do. And then I try to empathize with that. And no, empathizing with someone's pain does not equal excusing their behavior. I saw someone posting a couple months ago, very upset, like, we need to stop the narrative that when someone is being abusive, they're just a person in pain and we have to rescue them for that. That's a bullshit narrative. Hold on a minute. No, you don't have to rescue anyone who is being abusive as a result of their pain. But for humanity's sake, can we just recognize that their poor behavior does come from pain? Doesn't mean you need to rescue them. Doesn't mean you need to put up with it. Doesn't mean you need to excuse it. Empathizing with someone's pain does not equal excusing their behavior. And until we're all perfect, it's good to understand that pain is the genesis of poor behavior. And you know, it's a really helpful skill to have to be able to empathize with someone's pain without taking it on as your responsibility to fix. That's what you do when you empathize or have compassion for someone else's pain. You don't have to fix it, but it's really helpful to be aware that nobody woke up in the morning and thought, I know her, how can I F her life up? Third thing, think about appropriate boundaries. Now, personally, I've really shifted away from the idea that boundaries are as binary as you're in my life or you're not. You have access to me or you don't. Instead, I now think of boundaries as being sort of like getting security clearance. Like, you know how the CIA has different levels of security clearance, or at least my watching of shows like Homeland tells me such things. So this, you know, the CIA has like top level security clearances that other people within the CIA might not have, and that certainly the general public does not have. Well, the people closest to me get top level clearance into my heart. The people who have demonstrated through past behavior that they are committed to being offended, They don't get that kind of clearance. They might get the weather. They might get the highlight reel. They might get me asking some courteous questions about how they're doing. But when I interact with someone who has shown me a past commitment to being offended, I'm like, okay, cool. I will reveal 50%, not 100%. So it doesn't have to be the grand fuck you. It can just be, oh, okay. This is how far I'll go with you. We can still have some semblance of relationship, maybe. Depends on how bad things get with this commitment to being offended. And I'm going to be aware of appropriate boundaries. I'm not going to just keep opening my heart completely to this person and then going, gee, it happened that way again. I don't understand. I was being so open-hearted, which frankly is how I used to do it. It's like the Maya Angelou quote, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. It's the equivalent of knowing that while you might tell your partner that you are in it, you feel insecure about how well you're doing at work, you probably wouldn't schedule a company-wide meeting with your boss and coworkers to confess those same insecurities. Your partner has a much higher security clearance. Fourth, consider being open to the possibility that this other person, that they could change. I mean, you would never want to be entirely canceled or written off or shunned for your past mistakes. And you know, no one else wants that either. I mean, just think of like who you were in high school. If perhaps you were immature in high school and made mistakes or weren't very nice to people, I can think of several people from high school who it's painful to admit this, but I totally did the mean girls thing too. Totally bitchy, unkind, mean girls stuff. And I did that because I was in a place of insecurity and suffering. And I can only hope that ages and ages and ages later, no one would think that decades later, I would still be that person. Frankly, there are people, if I ever had access to them again, I'd offer them an apology. If somehow someone from high school or any point in my past has found this podcast, please know it's not who I am anymore. It's not how I would treat you now. And I'm sorry. So you don't want to be shunned for your past mistakes. You don't want other people to think that who you were when you made a past mistake is all of who you are. No one else wants that either. Now, being open. This is tricky stuff. You got to know how to be open. Being open does not mean being attached to someone changing. To me, it doesn't even mean rising to the level of being hopeful. Being open means simply that you understand that people are capable of change and hey, it could happen. It's like a shrug. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm open. Could happen. Being open also means willingness to get new information that might contradict the old story. For instance, be willing to notice the next time you engage with that person and there's no drama. Notice that. And then having noticed that, oh, I had this experience where I engaged with this person and there was no drama. When you think things later like, oh, well, they never, hold on. Be willing to swap that thought for, you know, in the past, did they have ... but tonight was different. Doesn't mean that you think that the skies have parted, the heavens have opened up, and everything's going to be different from here on out. Just means that in this moment, things are different. Fifth, be willing to have a conversation with the person about the impact of their behavior. You could try statements like, I was asking the time. It's not personal. Do you want to talk about that? Or, oh, I was eating what I was hungry for in the moment. Is there something you wanted to ask me about what I thought of the meal you made? Or in some cases, if someone's really being pretty aggressive, the conversation can be, I'm not okay with you raising your voice at me. It has to stop. If you want to have a conversation when you're calmer, I'm open to that. And if the conversation spirals more than once and they are not willing to hear feedback, fine, stop having conversations. I'm not saying throw yourself at the wall again and again and again, bashing your head so that you can stop and say, oh, finally, I feel better. I'm saying the hope is that from a messy, imperfect, human-to-human place, you'd at least attempt a conversation rather than just defaulting to cutting off. And sixth, I think it's important to separate conflict from abuse. The two are not the same. Conflict happens at some point in nearly every relationship. Someone in your life who takes things personally isn't being abusive. The two of you are conflicted. Elevating someone taking things personally from conflict to abuse puts an entirely different tone on the interactions between you two. Someone who spirals into fear that if you don't get back to them right away when they want to talk to you or whatever, that it must mean you don't love them. Someone who goes to that place is conflicted. Someone who screams at you and thinks that screaming at you is just, I'm authentically expressing my feelings. That is being abusive. Someone who's really pushy or bossy, wanting you to orient around their schedule or their restaurant or their agenda for the weekend or the day, they are in conflict with you. Someone who actually tries to control how you act, what you think, what you believe is being abusive. So walk away from abuse. I would never say, stay, have the conversation when someone's being abusive. See the opportunity in resolving conflict. Now, if you are willing to look at your own behavior, empathize with the other person's pain, rewrite how much access they get to you, be open to the possibility that could change. If you're willing to openly communicate or have conversations, if you're willing to separate conflict from abuse, you actually stop the cycle. How so? Because you've stopped letting the person draw you into their own commitment to being offended. I mean, they have a right to see the world as they want to, however that is. The goal here is not that for you two to get along, they have to see the world the same as you or vice versa. The goal here really is that someone stops the dance that two people have been locked in. And there are different ways to stop that dance, whether that's through no longer participating in the old dance or modeling a new dance, or both. So often we get locked into the idea that we have to be angry at someone until they change and apologize and make amends and start acting respectfully. And what I've learned is that holding on to that anger until they are different is our own version of commitment to being offended. And it's a prison we create for ourselves. An alternative to staying locked in a cage of anger and recycling endlessly how the other person wronged us is to decide that we get free when we no longer participate in the old dance. Just because they were offended doesn't mean you have to change. So in those relationships, arrive when you arrive, eat what you need to eat, ask the questions you need to ask, send the birthday cards you have the capacity to send. You are not obligated to tap dance towards their expectations. That's how you get free. Or just because they want to yell or criticize doesn't mean you have to stick around to hear it. This is your opportunity to state what is and isn't acceptable for you when communicating. This is your opportunity to see clearly where someone is hurting and decide to let them handle their own healing. It's not your responsibility. You can see that they are hurting and let them handle their own healing. That's how you get free. Just because they want to assume XYZ doesn't mean that you have to be locked into correcting their assumptions. They get to choose how they want to do life. If they are open to a conversation, great, that's helpful to know. Maybe something would shift. If their version of a conversation, air quotes, equals criticism, like, cool, we're going to have a conversation, but really it's just my opportunity to get some airtime to tell you how you're doing it all wrong. Yeah, that's not okay. It's okay to say it's not okay. And it's okay to say, yeah, I won't engage in that kind of a conversation. That's how you get free. So in essence, again, how you get free is when you too are no longer willing to do the same old dance. All right, that's today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. You know you can continue the work and the fun if you want to. Head on over to yourcourageouslife.com/begin and become a Your Courageous Life subscriber, because as soon as you sign up, you get access to an entire library of worksheets and audios and other bonuses. And of course, you'll be receiving more courage in your inbox. And who wouldn't love that? You can learn more about the Courageous Living Coach Certification at teamclcc.com. You can get the Courage Habit at your local bookseller, on Amazon, wherever you like. We can even connect on social media. I'm on Facebook at Your Courageous Life. So look for facebook.com/yourcourageouslife. And I'm on Instagram as Kate Courageous. And I'd love to connect with you on Instagram. So here's to you using these courageous tools in your life and creating a real ripple effect of good. And again, thanks so much for listening. I love it that you're here.